Welcome to Sleeping Through Class. I'm Brendan Horahoe. I'm here today with Kevin Beato and Nicholas Trishkevitz. We're talking to you today about the Haitian Revolution. We're picking up right after the French Revolution in our World History series. So we're going back in time to 1789. We saw the French Revolution take place, and now we're looking to see how that impacted a bunch of different colonies around the world, and specifically today, the Haitian colony, controlled by France. So Haiti is unique. It is one of the only places in the world where a slave rebellion actually leads to a revolution. So we're going to take a look at Haiti. Nick, can you tell us a little bit about the history of Haiti and why it was colonized by the French in the first place?
Yeah, sure. So Haiti is located in the Caribbean. It is a tropical country there. Originally, when it was a French colony, once the French arrived there, it was known as Saint-Domingue. And it's located on an island called Hispaniola, which is shared today with another country, the Dominican Republic. The French actually colonized the island in 1660, but because the island was originally owned by the Spanish, technically it was not a French territory. So in 1697, a treaty was established, and the French were given control over what is today Haiti. There was a lot of money being invested into Haiti at the time because pirates, many of them who had been robbing Spanish treasure ships as they headed back to Europe, were investing money there into sugar plantations. Sugar being a crop that grew in Haiti, grows in a warm climate like that. It can't grow in Europe, but it could grow in the Caribbean in a place like Haiti. And as a result, in Haiti, we see the development of big plantations for sugarcane, and then also coffee as well, which both became very, very popular in Europe and would generate a lot of money for the people growing those.
And sugar and coffee, I mean, talk about two of the most addictive things you can get back in the 16 and 1700s. I mean, I can't live without sugar, but I can't live without coffee. So the problem is people don't really want to go work over in Haiti. It is hot, it's muggy, and actually harvesting sugar is backbreaking work. Harvesting sugarcane is super, super difficult. So, Kevin, how did they find a labor force to come over to Haiti to harvest the sugar?
Yeah, so it's hard to get to entice people to go and work in Haiti, but there's so much money being generated there. I mean, 40% of Europe's sugar is coming from Haiti, 60% of the coffee is coming from Haiti. So they do what anyone would do at the time. They get slaves to come over. But there's also an issue with that because there's a massive turnover of slaves. By that, I mean, as you alluded to, harvesting sugarcane is extremely difficult labor and dangerous, especially when you're being worked long hours like that. Disease is also running rampant in the hot climate of Haiti. So a lot of the slaves come over and they just simply die. So they're constantly bringing new slaves in versus in the United States, where slaves would come. Well, they'd be brought, rather, I guess would be a more proper term. They didn't choose to come. They were forced to. But they'd have kids, and the kids could either continue working for the current slave owner or they could be sold off to another slave owner. In Haiti, you don't really have that because they're just dying way too quickly. But they keep bringing them in, and they keep working them so hard because they make so much more money than you do in the United States making tobacco and cotton. Not to say that slave owners in America didn't make a lot of money. They did. But if you look at the way in which they lived, you know, say a slave owner in Richmond, they had a nice house, but it's kind of boring. It's a brick building that typically looks like a big block. In Haiti, the sugar plantation owners live in what look like palaces, almost Versailles-like. So there's a massive discrepancy between what you would see in America versus what you would see in Haiti in that regard.
Yeah, and I think to add on to this, one of the things that we don't always maybe realize in the United States, especially for students that are in middle school or high school, is that slavery was not just something that occurred in America. It wasn't just the British who were doing this in their colonies, and it wasn't just Americans who were doing it once America gets independence. It was something that was common throughout the world at the time with European colonizing nations. Countries like Spain and France and Portugal also participated in the slave trade. And when we look at the Americas, you can see that in many of the colonies in the Americas, slaves being brought from Africa against their will across the ocean to places like Brazil, places like Haiti and Dominican Republic and Jamaica, and then, of course, the United States as well.
Yeah, and so it's really interesting to see, slavery was just the best financial option for the French, and so they sort of really pushed it hard. But things start to change, right? 1789 rolls around, you have the king losing his head, his wife also gets her head chopped off, and so suddenly the social structure is just collapsing. And we had the social structure where you had, the king and the nobles with the first estate, you had the second estate, which was the clergy, and you had the third estate, which was like everybody else. And over in Haiti, there was a really similar sort of structure with the Grand Blancs, which were like the rich white planters. They owned basically all of the territory. Now, they really didn't go work there too much and didn't visit too much, but they were, by and large, the ones who were making all of the money off of the sugar and coffee in Haiti. So underneath them, in this pyramid structure, you had the free people of color, which were mulattoes or maroons. Oftentimes, those were children of rich white planters who had children with slaves. And so obviously they didn't want to enslave their own children, so those people were free. Just below them were the poor whites who had sort of come over looking for jobs, sort of like managing the slaves, those kinds of things. Maybe they were traders in the areas of the Caribbean, that kind of thing. And then at the very bottom and the largest chunk of the social structure was slaves themselves. So they made up the vast majority, 90% of the population of Haiti. So when the French Empire starts to fall apart, the National Assembly declares the rights of man, which is very similar to the American Bill of Rights. It says, hey, look, you have life, liberty, property, all these kinds of things. And the three big ideas that come out of the French Revolution are liberty, equality, and fraternity. Well, liberty means freedom, equality means that everybody's treated the same, and fraternity means that we're all brothers, right? We're all Frenchmen. So how did the people in Haiti handle this? Was everybody cool suddenly now that these slaves were going to be free and that the social structure was going to be just a flat playing field?
Yeah, so in France you have the three estates like you alluded to, and in Haiti we have these four tiers of the pyramid. Fraternity especially, when you look at each of them, they all wanted different things. Obviously, the slaves want to be free, but the petty blancs do not want them to be free. And actually, these guys, the poor whites, essentially, they thought they were the ones being oppressed. They thought the economic system was hindering them. They wanted economic reforms to help, give them a boost, such as lowering interest rates so that they could pay off their debts more easily. So there's a lot of infighting here, but the bulk of the population are the slaves, making up about 90% of the population out of like 550,000 people in Haiti. 500,000 of them are slaves. And so if they can organize themselves to start a slave revolt, perhaps, the numbers game really favors them if they can organize themselves.
Yeah, and so we're at this moment where, a revolution can take place, right? You have the free people of color, you have the slaves, they're against the whites. The whites, particularly the poor whites, feel like they're the ones that are being oppressed and that their slaves might be taken away and all kinds of stuff. And because the population of Haiti is just so extreme and dominated by slaves, they obviously have the numbers to win if there becomes a violent revolution. And one man shows up, Toussaint Louverture. Is probably not how you pronounce it, but he was a leader who organized the slaves into a real army that could actually battle with the French. And so the Spanish colony of Santo Domingo, the Dominican Republic used to be controlled by the Spanish, and that's why they speak Spanish and Haiti speaks French, even though they're all on the same island. Santo Domingo supported Louverture, and they basically tried to help the French get their butts kicked, right? They tried to help kick the French off. Now, the Spanish were partially thinking, we can get rid of the French here, and then maybe we can conquer all of Hispaniola. And things sort of, they go from this little skirmish between the people there into sort of like an all-out brawl. You have the Spanish, the British, the slaves, they're all fighting against the French. And eventually the French decided to free their slaves. They just said, look, this is an absolute headache. We have the Reign of Terror going over in France. People are dying. You know, 17,000 people are getting their heads chopped off and stuff. Let's just let it be. So on February 4th, 1794, the revolt is finally over. The revolution is done. The slaves had freed themselves. And the French officially said, all right, we're done. You know, we're not going back. Nick, tell me a little bit about what happened after February 4th, 1794.
So after February 4th, 1794, as you can imagine, with a revolution, there's a bit of a struggle for power in Haiti. You know, you have this, colonial overlord nation of France that's been kicked out, and now with that power vacuum, you try to figure out who is going to be in charge from there. And they're going to be led by Louverture at first, but he's going to have to deal with a civil war. There's warring factions fighting for power there, and that's going to lead to him having this struggle where he's going to try to maintain control over Haiti. Eventually, Louverture wins this civil war. He passes a new constitution. But in France, things have changed as well. And now France has a new leader over there, and that is Napoleon, who we talked about in the last episode. Napoleon has other plans. Okay, Napoleon wants to reintroduce slavery and turn Haiti back into the French colony and money-making machine that it was, producing that sugar and coffee that would be sold across France and across the rest of Europe and bringing money into the French government and to Napoleon as he continues to seek out domination over Europe. So Louverture is arrested by the French, and then he is sent to prison in France where he would eventually die there. The French would then attempt to reconquer Haiti now that their leader, Louverture, was out of the picture, now that he had been taken away to prison and had died there. But that doesn't exactly go as the French had hoped. Do you guys want to say what happened there?
Yeah, sure. So the French end up sending 40,000 soldiers to Haiti. So what they want to do, they want to take the guns away, put a lot of restrictions on them and even bring slavery back. But it really is just a disaster for the French. You know, at a time when the French army was the major land power of the world, they get their butts kicked by all these, slaves in Haiti. Out of the 40,000 troops that are sent there, 32,000 of them will die during the war. But a lot of that didn't come from the fighting. Very common in this time frame, as we alluded to when we were talking about slavery at the beginning of this, disease took hold of the French. And so that's how they lost a lot of their troops. So the French attempt to take over Haiti again was just kind of dead on arrival. They just were not going to be able to do it due to disease.
And numbers, yeah. And so Jean-Jacques Dessalines leads the Haitians to victory over the French pretty easily. And on January 1st, 1804, officially, Haiti declares their independence. Now, France, because they were bitter, did not recognize Haiti as a free country until 1825. The United States, I saw somewhere, didn't even recognize Haiti until like the 1860s. So it really did take a while for people to accept that these black people, these slaves, had freed themselves. And it was a bit of a shocker for them.
Yeah, definitely a shocker, and there are some interesting things with this. Haiti and their revolution is successful, and a couple things that are unique about it is it's the only time where we see a slave revolution, or at least the first one that is successful in creating a greater revolution, and it leads to these slaves eventually establishing their own nation and their own independence. And it also kind of brings an end to, at least for a while, France's goals of continuing an empire that expanded into the Americas. They would sell away the Louisiana Purchase to the United States under President Thomas Jefferson for just $15 million, a super cheap deal if you look at the size of the Louisiana Purchase, stretching basically across the middle of what is today the United States. And so this revolution in Haiti brings about some pretty big changes in that way.
Yeah, and one of the things that I like to highlight with my kids is just to remind them, like, if you look back at the French Revolution, the Haitian Revolution, the American Revolution, they're all inspired by the same ideas that came out of the Enlightenment. You know, like John Locke and, you know, Montesquieu and these ideas of freedom and equality and, you know, not just being ruled by a king or being ruled by somebody else, but wanting to, you know, be autonomous and wanting to be in charge of yourself. It's a very attractive idea. And you can see how in the 18th century in particular, it's taking root all over the world.
Yeah, for sure. And we'll see. I think in our next episode, this continues, this era of revolutions and change and people sort of overthrowing their colonial masters. We'll see that again in Latin America as this continues to spread.
Yeah. So for Kevin, for Nick, and for myself, thank you for joining us for another episode of Sleeping Through Class. We will see you next week when we talk about Latin American revolutions.